Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytane and Tsintsiyan First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. Welcome back. Regular listeners of this podcast will by now be familiar with some of the great quality improvement work physicians are doing across British Columbia. But our healthcare system has a much larger and important component, which is the organizational healthcare delivery system, comprising of our public hospitals, health centers, and all the staff that support them. As previous guests on this podcast, we've had Kathy Orrick and Chiro Panessa, CEOs of Northern Health Authority. And today we're revisiting Northern Health C-Suite, here to talk about delivering organizational healthcare quality with an Indigenous health lens is our guest, Nicole Cross, Northern Health's Vice President for Indigenous Health and Chief Planning and Quality Officer. Welcome, Nicole. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get into your role, I'm wondering if you could give us a little bit of background and tell us a little bit about your career path. Where did you grow up, for instance, and how did your journey to the Executive Board of Northern Health unfold?
Okay, no, I'd gladly share a little bit about that. So I'm actually from the Nisga Nation and the Killawell Clan and the House of Nisius. And I was born and raised in a small community called Lahkalzat. That's part of the Nisga Nation. My community has about 500 people in it. And so I grew up back home my entire life with a lot of family, a lot of culture, a lot of time in the smokehouse and running around our village with my friends. During that time, I really developed a natural kind of pull towards living things and a fascination with nature and all those types of things. And so I think one of my first areas of caring, I would say, that really people would talk about a lot when I was growing up was my affinity for stray dogs and my nature for knowing whenever there was a new litter of puppies being born in the village that I would be one of the first kids to go running to greet and welcome the new puppies to the community. And so I had a whole bunch of different interactions in my life with taking care of wild animals and other animals just a fascination with life and science thanks to my dad and my upbringing. And so that led to, a natural pull to the sciences. Early on in my life, I actually went to UBC's summer science program for Indigenous youth in BC. That was my first venture into over to those higher level education, and that really kind of opened my eyes. I think that's the first time I touched a microscope, and I had an understanding of health careers. And from there, I pursued my bachelor focusing on biology and psychology at the University of Victoria, and I did my master's of health administration at UBC. And did the national fellowship with McMaster. During that time period, I was very, very lucky in my health career in terms of the opportunities that unfolded before me. I was a young mother after my bachelor's degree, and I was actually about to accept a career at a call center at TELUS because I couldn't find any work related to health. When I got a call from CSFS at UHNBC, and I was asked to become an Indigenous patient liaison at University Hospital. Through that experience, I really had the opportunity to support Indigenous families that were coming from all over the North into our biggest facility. And at the same time as that, I was offered an opportunity to work as the health director in Sekedene, one of the most rural communities in Northern BC. And it was just a incredibly beautiful experience, amazing leaders and community members there that I had the privilege of getting to know and work with. And then carrying on from there, I was offered the role with FNHA. It was just getting started. It was actually the First Nations Health Society at the time. And they were looking for an individual to help engage chiefs across Northern BC about whether this was something we wanted to pursue. Did we want to create our own health authority? And I was very grateful to be able to take on that responsibility of supporting and learning from our leaders about what that vision is for self-determination in healthcare. And so, and then I spent 10 years growing up in FNHA and partnering with Northern Health on partnership accords and all that good stuff. And then during the pandemic, after we got the first round of vaccines out, I was offered a role with the ministry as the executive director and then the assistant deputy minister for Indigenous Health, supporting the implementation of the in-plain sight recommendations. And so that was a huge system shift and recognition across the province of BC about systemic racism in the healthcare system. And so I took that on for a year. After that, I was offered the opportunity to come into Northern Health as the vice president for Indigenous Health, where I was really grateful to join the executive team here. And from there, we've continued to grow the Indigenous Health work and recognizing the strong connections with quality and quality improvement and systemic change. And I took on the role of chief planning and quality officer last year. So, long story, but those are some of the highlights. I hope that helps.
Yeah, that's an amazing story, and that's very circuitous route from starting off with looking after the dogs in your local village. But that's actually a very logical route as well, and you can see the linkages and you can see the relationship between those roles. So, and as you say, a lot of the time, these things are the opportunities arise, right? And you're in the right place at the right time, and then you're the right person. And so that's great to hear that story.
Oh, I'm still thinking about those beautiful puppies and your journey, right? At every level. And we're just so fortunate to have you with us. So yeah, great story. So your official role title is Vice President Indigenous Health and Chief Planning and Quality Officer. This sort of sounds like three separate jobs, but how did they come to live together under a single portfolio, and how are they related?
No, I think that's a really great question. I think really reflecting on that career path and those experiences, it wasn't until later in my career when I really realized that the work that we're doing, when we're talking about Indigenous health and cultural safety and reconciliation, how that work it cross-cuts everything that we do in an organization and everything that we do in providing good care, and how it's foundational to us as leaders in our striving to be our best. A lot of the elements within In Plain Sight or other recommendations, they really involve a lot of quality improvement, a lot of planning, a lot of those other elements. And so I think it was while I was in the role with the ministry that I really realized how essential the work at Indigenous Health and Reconciliation is for strengthening the entire healthcare system. And a lot of lessons learned from Indigenous ways of being and knowing that can really help to strengthen the healthcare system. And I think that those elements really weave in very nicely with our work on quality improvement, our work on planning, and our efforts in terms of what our top priorities are within Northern Health at this time. And so I also find these types of teams are... I think people might overuse it, but they're very innovative. They're very much pushing pulling the system into being its best. I think that that type of energy and environment is very natural to come together to help move together towards change.
So on that, can you give us some examples of projects you're leading or you're supporting at the roles which demonstrate this overlap? You've mentioned a few, like with that basically quality improvement underpinning and running throughout it all, right?
I would say a couple of examples that come to mind would be the work that we have on Indigenous patient experience and how we work to adjust our way of responding to complaints as a way of welcoming in patient feedback, one that is restorative, looking at how it becomes something that's encouraged to be able to work through those stories together as opposed to something that is feared. And so I think that those are really important foundational pieces of Indigenous ways of being. Like in Nisga'a, we refer to Indigenous people as Alubi'get, people that live transparently, openly, you know. And so like those principles of not being ashamed, like that, you know, that these are things that we address openly and transparently together are really important principles that I think benefit, you know, the overall improvement of quality services in healthcare. I think that there are examples of work that's happening thanks to the leadership of Indigenous communities who are really wanting to be a part of improving policy within Northern Health. And so how are we creating safe and supportive, transparent places to engage more broadly our patients and our partners in helping to advise and helping us to see where policies are harmful and where they can be more supportive to the experience of Indigenous people and patients in general. So I think like those are examples of elements that I think will have broad-facing impact on how we operate as an organization. And that's what I'd hope that some of these elements will start to have, are those impacts on how we operate overall.
Yeah, with that lens of curiosity and with the aim for improvement, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And you're right. That is that key transparency piece about being open and giving opportunity to get that feedback from patients and directly and from their communities is absolutely key. And that leads nicely into the next question, which I have, which it's really on the topic of systems of quality and safety. In recent times, we've seen a bit of a shift, haven't we, as in how we approach healthcare quality and safety, sort of a little shift away from that historical, more reactive approach of identifying sentinel harm events and then drilling down on those events to underlying causes, remote cause analysis, and then implementing corrective actions. And now moving a little, I mean, that's still an important part, but now moving towards a more proactive approach with more continuous monitoring and trying to prevent harmful events occurring before they happen. I'm wondering if you, and the transparency piece feeds into that beautifully, but I wonder whether you can tell me what this might look like in a large healthcare organization like Northern Health.
Yeah, no, I think like it's so interesting, that shift. And I think that really is based on, you know, a growing understanding of just, you know, how complex and adaptive our healthcare system is. And that the fact that, you know, we have far more things going right than go wrong, right? And so, you know, where the workforce can adapt to that complexity that we're navigating. And so I think that shift is one that you articulate in that question. I think the proactive approach is really about understanding what's going well and how healthcare professionals can adapt to different conditions and create safety for patients in our care. What does this look like? Instead of quality being something that's nice to do, that it becomes something that's embedded in every conversation that we're having. It's not something that we do just for accreditation. It's something that is a consistent conversation about how we deliver care. And welcoming in those learning opportunities for what went wrong and what went right. It should become something that's that is just systematic in our approach as healthcare providers. Instead of a nice to do, it is care. You know, that is the center of care, is constantly reflecting and growing and learning and improving.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And you're right, it is a change that's required in both the mindset and the attitude, but quite a big cultural shift in the way we deliver care. I mean, do you see any? I'm just going to ask, how do you think that we can actually achieve that shift through an entire organization like Northern Health? That's quite a challenge, given the organizational size and its current operational challenges, is to try and develop that mindset shift and that culture shift. Any thoughts on a strategy for that?
Yes. So I think, like, you know, our quality team's been putting a lot of thought towards, you know, those different mechanisms of change, right, to help this. So I think everybody agrees this is work that we need to be doing, but what are some of those change strategies and mechanisms to help this become just second nature, right? And so some of this involves how we reflect this in our overall operational plan, these commitments to quality, and how this cross-cuts at an executive and other levels as something that is essential to us as an organization. So we've done a lot of work in terms of how we strengthen our overall operational plan to reflect a commitment to quality improvement, to reflect a commitment to patient-centered care. And so then it becomes like, you know, that next level of, okay, what are the structures and the systems we need to put into place to enable that those conversations, those dialogues, and that accountability to be realized? And so at this time, there's, you know, there's work underway at how we establish quality committees. And what does that look like with this large organization in terms of how we establish that to be meaningful? There's, you know, work in terms of strengthening how we respond to adverse events. So when there is a harm, you know, how are we re-looking at how we're doing section, you know, section 51 reviews and other kinds of connections in terms of unpacking those events in a way that helps to support the providers, but also, you know, the healthcare system to improve. And so there are these improvements where you're going to see our quality team showing up more and prioritizing how we're supporting our frontline leaders to really reflect and integrate these improvement efforts.
Sure. Yeah, that's good to know. Can I just ask you, what's your vision for the quality committees? Out of interest, because that's a little bit of a new concept to some of our organizations.
I think that's going to be something that we're going to have to develop together as we establish those committees. In terms of, I could say what I hope we could start to achieve in terms of conversations about. In terms of unpacking adverse events or other experiences and learning from promising practices and all those types of things at those quality committees. But there are, you know, when I talk to the team, there's various other items that I think leaders will want to see in terms of how we connect on quality improvement efforts. I think it's going to become even more important is finding that balance during like fiscally constrained times and capacity constrained times about how we, you know, we prioritize our time together in those spaces and what does that, you know, what does that look like? And I guess what I would say is what I'd hope is that sometimes when we're in times like this in a health system that's stretched financially across BC and Canada, that quality becomes something that's seen as an inefficiency sometimes financially, like providing good care might take longer and it then therefore might be seen as an inefficiency. And so I think that there's even more need for us to demonstrate that providing quality care in the long run is actually the most efficient thing that we can do. and so having those committees that are reinforcing, you know, those practices of good quality care are going to be important.
Yeah, I love that. So that, and you're right, absolutely right. The quality has so many different dimensions that are interlinked, and one of those is both patient-centered care, but also a more efficient way of delivering care. So that's great to hear. Well, we'll watch this space. I think with interest.
I think it's a great pinging off place for the next question, and I just loved something you said earlier. You were talking about quality improvement in the center of care. And I think it leads really, really well into this next question, which is around the patient experience. And how can patient partners and their families contribute to these new quality and safety structures that that are being built? And how does patient engagement, how does it look different in Indigenous communities? So that's a double-loaded question. So sorry about that, but.
No, that's okay. You might have to prompt me if I'm missing something. I think the partnership with patients can and should happen at all levels of the organization. We are so much better and so much stronger as providers and organizations and leaders when we have the gift of those relationships helping to inform, you know, the direction that we're moving. I think, like, you know, where I come from, I say, you know, I belong to the Nisga'a Nation. Like, that's always how I was raised. Like, I belong to them. Like, that's, and I think Northern Health belongs to the North. It belongs to the citizens of the North, and they should feel that, you know, they should feel like Northern Health is theirs, and it's something that they're proud of and that they can contribute to in various ways. And so I think, you know, partnering, you know, with patients and the community just does, and, you know, it helps us to reduce harm, obviously build trust, and improve outcomes. I think a lot of us get into this field, whether it's administratively or in other ways, because we have a desire to serve and contribute and make a difference. And that ultimately is for, you know, this, you know, the families in front of us and the generations to come. And so I think it's only natural that, you know, one of the most gratifying things we can do is sit next to and hear from patients in terms of, you know, how we're doing and where we can go. I think there's a lot of really brilliant people out there that, again, in times where we might feel like we're stuck in healthcare, you know, an idea from a patient about how we might solve a problem, it can come from anywhere. And I think we just have to be a lot more open to having those conversations. I think the North is always very creative, and that includes our families and patients in the North. And I think we need to do a better job at cultivating those ideas and that energy into a really exhausted healthcare system. You know, and I recall when, you know, when some of the hospitals were going on diversion, and we were in a meeting with First Nations leadership. I think it was in the Northwest at this time. And it wasn't a, why aren't you doing more, Northern Health? It was a, what can we do to help? You know, is there a way that we can help? And I really find that such a beautiful part about being in the North is that that natural desire to roll up our sleeves and lend a hand to each other. And I guess when I think about patient partners and families contributing to Northern Health, that natural value and approach of Northern citizens comes to mind. And it's something that I think we're very lucky to have, and we should definitely harness. I think some ways that we can help and support patient and family to contribute is to, I'm really big on, you know, health literacy and like empowering patients and families with information that they need to feel like they can make an informed decision. That just makes our dialogue a lot easier between the health system and families and patients. I think that it also helps to lower that that power imbalance. Coming in informed, just, you know, it helps people walk in confidently and have a conversation with a doctor as a partner, as opposed to you know, an authority figure. And so I think those types of you know, that type of work to with our patients is going to be important. I think the more that we're collaborating on decision making is going to be really valuable with our patient partners. And I think the more that we're encouraging, you know, patients and families to voice safety concerns without that risk and that fear of compromising their own care or the care that they'll receive, that we actually welcome that because that makes us better. You know, so we want, you know, you're gifting us with guidance, and that's something that we value. It's not something that we want to hide from or that we're going to be defensive on. Like, we welcome it, and that just changes, you know, that conversation and the willingness of patients to share, I hope. And then I think just the more that we create meaningful opportunities for engagement in healthcare redesign, you know, there's nothing more powerful than feeling like you contributed to that new service, or you had a say in that new building, or that new program, or that new, you know, strategic plan. I think we're better for it. When it comes to engagement with Indigenous communities, I'm very lucky to have spent a lot of time with the communities in the North. I think, you know, I think that there are some important principles as we do that. Like, it is, there is obviously a historic trust issue, right? In terms of that we see with in plain sight or other kinds of reports, in terms of you know, effort and work that needs to be put in to strengthen those relationships. I think the way that we you know, engage honestly and truthfully, follow up with action in terms of and clear communication with Indigenous partners, like my team member Coco Miller, who supports our overall engagement strategy. You know, she always reminds us, you know, you said, we heard, we did, you know, and it goes around in that cycle, right? In terms of that's how you build relationships and build trust, is making sure that we are putting the effort in there. I think it's very important to always take a distinctions-based approach in terms of how we engage with First Nations communities in the North, with the Métis chartered communities and individuals in the North, and Inuit individuals. There's very distinct conversations and, you know, histories and strengths and all this beautiful diversity that we should be honoring, that we should make sure that we're not causing harm by taking out, you know, by just engaging as one. They are very distinct. Every village has a different priority. So there's just, there's a lot of beauty we can learn from that. And I think as a system, the more that we're able to engage in a way that shifts us from a place of power and all-knowing health system, all-knowing health provider, to a student of the communities, you know, the better we'll be for it. So I listed off some of my experiences. Can you hear the train? Should we stop?
No. Okay. That's fine. You can carry on. It's not too bad, actually. It's not too loud.
Okay. Well, as we, you know, I was sharing my experiences, and, you know, in my community, they very much championed ever since I was little. You know, you go out and you learn everything you can from the Western system. You go, and this is at all the feasts, they reiterated it. And so I took that to heart. And so did my other members of our family. And so we all went to university and, you know, went to go and learn. And I kept on looking. That's why I did the master's and I did the, I'm like, there's got to be something here that's going to help me understand why things are the way they are when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to, you know, just the way the world is, and how we can change it. But at the end of the day, you know, nothing has ever topped what I learned while I was growing up at home. Every single leadership book, every single strategy, when I reflect on what I learned, in our feast halls and in our smokehouse and with my family, like, those are what I draw on in terms of frameworks and in terms of how I lead as a leader and how, and so I share that because, I think we all have, there's so much to learn. And it's such a gift to learn from our Indigenous partners and communities. And not just limited to, you know, traditional medicines and I'm talking about like how they develop leaders, how they deal with conflict, how they heal. Like, there's just so many beautiful things that when communities are ready to share that with us, or individuals, I just really encourage leaders to just sit as a student of these communities and these traditions and these stories. And it's probably some of the best education you could ask for.
I love that. Yeah, and you can see that that's really your background coming through there, how that's grounded you, how that's given you the motivation to seek better solutions, right, for providing healthcare. I think that's great. And that leads nicely into our last question, which was really about you, actually, and your motivation. And because you're obviously a busy person, you've got an important role, you've got a big portfolio with three different roles rolled into one, and I think you've got a sense of your underlying motivation. What gets you out of bed in the morning? But I wonder whether you have any. Can you tell us how, you know, what do you do? What do you do to relax? What do you do to decompress and allow you to fill your cup every morning and come back raring to go?
Oh, great question. I think. Motivation-wise, I would say growing up, like my grandmother and my grandfather, they really raised us with a strong sense of identity as well as a strong sense of responsibility. And so there was always a responsibility to our community. So Anybody that grew up back home, you're born into a whole bunch of different organizations that you volunteered to and that you have responsibilities to, as well as cultural responsibilities. And so my family and my grandparents were very much big members of our, you know, our community and our tradition, our WILP, our house. And so that sense of responsibility, if nobody, my grandma used to always say, if I don't do it, who will? And so, you know, that's really entrenched in terms of a sense of responsibility and gratitude, I'd say. Like, I'm incredibly grateful to be where I am, where I came from. And it's out of that sense of gratitude for all of those good things that I feel like I have a responsibility to give back. And it brings me a lot of joy to be able to try to contribute to support communities and families and patients and leaders in this organization to, you know, to really strive to be their best, to provide care in a way that they can all be proud of. So that brings me a lot of joy that I get to do that. And, you know, in my own way, it fills my cup right up. Anytime I get to spend time with community, you know, really fills me right up. I am a mother. So I have a 15-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son. And so they keep me on my toes. I think I learned earlier on in my career, I worked way too much, I would say to the point of, especially while we were establishing the First Nations Health Authority. And I think I am just so grateful to the leaders from community and with First Nations Health and Northern Health at the time, too, that really sat me down and checked in on me and reminded me, like, you know, you're never going to get this time back, you know, you really need to prioritize that time. And I feel like I am such a better leader now for having put up those, you know, the healthy boundaries I needed to put up to be a good mother. So I don't have to sacrifice being a good mother to be good at this role. They actually support each other. When I'm doing really good at one, I'm pretty good at the other too. So like it's, so I've learned that it's not all or nothing in career. That's been really helpful. I would say, well, how do I take care of myself? I'm in awe of the world a lot of the time. I know that sounds super cheesy, but I really am. Like, I am an avid bird watcher. I will stop and stare at plants and like buds. I will stop to look at bugs. Like, I am, like, I really am in awe at of the living world. And so that is how probably I refresh myself, is going on walks and runs. And the walks and runs usually end up with me going to look at a ditch at a weird plant that I saw or something interesting. Like, that fills me up, is just appreciating those little moments in life that you know, they might be fleeting, but maybe I'm the only person that's ever going to appreciate them in that moment. And so I find a lot of joy in those little bits of my day that fill me right up. And then I guess I'd put a final plug in for just in terms of the you know, the impact of a really wonderful team that I get to work with, you know, seeing them achieve and just flourish in their work is, as a leader, I don't think you can ask for more, is seeing people really find their passion and be able to achieve what they want to achieve. So those are all things that fill me back up after a long day. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And that's such a lovely holistic approach to wellness, actually. And I think that's lovely, because they're all interlinked, and yet it's so broad. And I can just see how they just would motivate you and bring you back to work every day in that positive mindset and with that positive frame of mind. So thank you for that. And that's a lovely moment, actually, to wrap things up for our interview today. And I can hear the closing music, which means it's time to formally thank you, Nicole, for coming on and joining us today. It's been really enlightening having you on. You've touched on so many important topics, and it's been delightful having you with us today. And as a token of our thanks, of course, like all our guests, we'll be sending you one of our exclusive and highly coveted Quality Cast North coffee mugs. But for now, not very many of those out there. But for now, it's actually goodbye from us, from Nicole Cross, our guest, and your hosts. I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycomms@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation with the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Cher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.